Ready to dive in? Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast. Every episode, we explore, expand, and evolve our understanding of the truths we encounter and experience in our human quest for clarity and exponential growth. And now welcome your hosts, Dr. Jeffrey Smith and Jim Case. Welcome to Adventures in Truth Podcast.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another Adventures in Truth livecast. My name is Jim Case, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Jeffrey Smith. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I am well. It's a beautiful day here in Colorado, and I'm sure it's starting to be a beautiful day there in California, maybe.
Absolutely.
But we'd like to reach out and welcome everybody to the show. Thank you for joining us. If you're on Facebook Live with us, on our Facebook page, you can interact with us and ask questions, send comments, etc. We're also live on YouTube, and we're live on E360 TV. So you can catch us all over the place right now. But today we're going to talk about Minor Shift, actually. Many of you out there probably saw we were going to have Paul Diamond back again to talk about very specifically get into diving into symbolism and the things that revolve around coming out of a journey. So we're rescheduling that. Paul is a little under the weather, so we're rescheduling that, and we'll have that coming back here in the next couple of weeks, so we'll keep you posted on that. So today we pivoted, and we're going into managing wellness, both of us feeling very strongly about this time. Obviously, we're in a place where there's a lot going on with depending on your viewpoint, depending on your perspective, whether there's a virus, whether there's not a virus, none of that really matters. What matters is here we are. What matters is there is a lot going on, and it has a lot to do with our health and our wellness. And so we thought, let's dive into that. Let's dive into some of these alternative perspectives that we might be able to incorporate about why this virus is here. But it speaks to such a larger, what a horrible English, speaks to a much greater perspective of how we have demonized processes of change in our experience. And this relates to a podcast we did a couple of weeks ago about change. But we demonize the process of change. So when things come up to stimulate change, we attack it. We go after it. And what we've been discovering in our own investigations and our own explorations is there's some alternative perspectives that I think are even more powerful and more applicable to what we're experiencing right now. Any thoughts on that today, Jeff, to start us off?
Well, yes. If we could.
here's the bomb. Take it.
I'd like to perhaps put this in the context that we've talked previously about what reality is what is. And without that being too cliche, when we argue with reality, we're telling the universe that what is shouldn't be here, as if there's a mistake or as if there is some problem that the creator, whatever that is, in your worldview or universal view, is out of control and things are all amiss and there's a problem. And the universe actually isn't seeing any of this as a problem. It's the entire experience we're having is about creating change. So the virus is a change agent. And it's here. It's supposed to be here. And how do we know it's supposed to be here? Because it is. It really is just that simple. And the more people try to pretend it should not be, or it's, whether it was man-made, whether it was, nature-made, whether it was passed from an animal to man, none of that even really matters in terms of if you understand, if we knew exactly what the origin of it is, it doesn't have any bearing on whether it's here or not. It's here. It does seem to be a thing. I personally don't have any experience with it. I don't know anybody personally that has been affected or died from it. Doesn't mean that that hasn't happened somewhere. I just simply don't have any personal experience with it. So I really can't talk about it from that particular perspective. So anyway, those were my thoughts regarding putting some context around it, that let's not be those who are arguing with reality and somehow think that it should not be here, because it is here. So what are we going to do with it? How are we going to live with it and move forward with it?
Yeah, very well said. I like that. The idea of alternative perspectives here is not about burying your head in the sand and pretending nothing's happening, and it's about burying your head in the sand and pretending nothing's happening. I say that because that's the paradox that we live in. So much of what we're experiencing, you know, for me, like you, Jeff, I have no direct contact with anyone who has been sick or died from COVID, which in and of itself is what it is. I mean, I don't know that I think much of it one way or the other. But the thing that's so powerful to me are some of the perspectives that we're getting to see now that enable us to hold this in a different light. I think we're so used to, at least as members of the United States, looking for ways to have conflict and looking for ways to fight perspectives and looking for ways to have, I'm trying to find the right words here too. We don't focus in wellness. We don't focus in positive. We don't focus in alternative perspectives that could be helpful. We tend to battle about the minutia. We tend to battle about, at least that's what we're presented by via the, you know, the media and television and news, and all of that stuff sort of sends the same message. But I don't want to dwell there. I want to talk about it from the perspective of these alternative perspectives. So one of those perspectives talks about this idea of this virus being showing up in our experience as a creation of our own lack of self-love, as our own lack of, and I'm paraphrasing my understanding, so Jeff, I'm sure you'll help fine-tune this, but an expression of humanity's inability to treat each other as human, humanity's inability to treat each other with love and respect and to honor all humans, not specific humans. And we've spent hundreds of years, if not thousands of years, culling and fine-tuning and trying to, and not in a good way, I'm saying culling and fine-tuning from a negative perspective, from this idea of how do I control people and manage people, and who are the better people and who are the lesser people, and who gets managed and who doesn't get managed, and who wants money, and, you know, it just goes on and on. And so reframing this experience gives us the opportunity to say, wow, I can change my personal experience. And by changing my personal experience, that can evolve into something much greater.
Yes, I'm mindful once again regarding some things we've stated in previous podcasts that might also help to give some context to what you were just stating in terms of how humans are treating each other and have treated each other. There was a time on this planet before the notion of property became in our consciousness that no one looked at any piece of land or any object as something that they actually owned and weren't willing to share with their clan, their tribe, their peeps, their posse, whatever context you want to put all that in. And then at some point in human history, generally it's believed somewhere along some fertile valley near some river, somebody said, wow, we don't have to hunt meat so much any longer. We can grow vegetables, and this would be a really cool place to do it. So let's call this camp, let's call this home, and now we're going to guard it. And we're going to say, it's ours. And other people that come along here, we don't want them to settle or stay, or, you know, we don't want to share this piece of property with them. And that's, you know, that happened a long, long, long time ago. And ever since then, we have lost this notion of we're all one, we're all part of the same family, regardless of what race or color or any other differences may show up in small, subtle ways. We no longer really think of each other as brothers and sisters. So the virus perhaps is going to help us reorient to that, because this is something that is affecting the entire planet. We're all in this. I'm not aware of any particular country or group of people who somehow got an exempt pass from having to deal with all of this. So we're hoping that that is one of the outcomes from what we're all going through, is that there would be more of a universal awareness of how where we go one, we go all, or just this notion of we are a family.
So. Yeah, good stuff. It's and that's one perspective, you know. Another very powerful perspective, and they all sort of relate to each other, but they're a little bit different in tone. Another perspective, reframing possibility, is this idea of the microbiome. This is not new information, but it's coming more and more online as far as being paid attention to, how our bodies and our whole system, everything about us is a complex organism of bacteria and viruses and parasites, and we're listening to a video the other day and again yesterday, because it was so fascinating to me. What was his name?
I don't recall, Jim. I'll have to look it up.
I'll have to look it up, so I'm looking it up. I just sent it. Zach something. Sorry, I'll get to it.
I don't think his last name was something, but...
No, Dr. Zach Bush, who is quite an extraordinary guy, huge history, but he talks about the microbiome and how this virus is just simply... the biome finding its balance, that we have as a species become so unhealthy. And so what they're finding is that in places where life is generally more unhealthy, more people are sick and dying. Shocker. But taking that to another level, so they're saying, like, the Wuhan province where this apparently started, the levels of pollution and lack of good health and age, I guess, is another issue, but these things have a very powerful impact. But because of the nature, so like New York City, the places that are hitting major hotspots and the areas that are hitting major hotspots apparently have a lot to do with the density of pollution, in addition to being close together and poor habits. And so there's this whole kind of other reframing of this, that this is just the biome trying to readjust itself. And that the dying process is also a part of that shift. It occurs every year in our human experience. We go through the process of spring and awakening and summer and growth and fall as things go quiet and winter as things die. So it's a natural part of the process. Again, not anything to demonize, just something to another perspective that can take the stress out of this process a little bit. You know, it's not a scepter that's hanging over our heads. It's an opportunity. We can choose how we want to step into that opportunity. So another perspective. Did you get a chance, Jeff, or did you get to experience him at all, or any of that process?
I did. That was a fascinating perspective. Yes. Yeah. It made me mindful of, I can't remember what particular class it was, but it was a decade or more ago, probably closer to two decades ago. This course I was taking was helping us understand the ecosystem in totality, in particular with regard to mountain lions and wolves. And they were using Yellowstone Park as an example, where ranchers, for the most part, decimated the wolf packs, as they weren't, you know, imagine the wolves weren't really compliant with leaving the cattle alone and leaving the sheep alone, that the ranchers were trying to introduce into those areas, and thought that, you know, we can do this. So they killed a great number of the wolves, as well as the mountain lions. And what was really fascinating is that with the eradication of those, what we would call apex predators, trees, I mean, it affected a mountainous area that was full of trees and full of life, and it became more meadows and very sparse and almost deserty based on the animals that weren't there. And as soon as you start taking out certain large populations of, you create an imbalance, and it literally changed the topography of the entire area. And as they reintroduced the wolves and the mountain lions back again, then over a period of decades, the flora and the fauna began to come back to what was considered to be more indigenous to that area. So just really absolutely fascinating that when we start messing with something, it really has a big effect down the road. So to a healthy, you know, a healthy herd of buffalo in Yellowstone or a healthy herd of deer or elk, they actually need a wolf pack to keep it strong. To keep the herd strong, the wolves and the apex predators will take down the weak, they'll take down the aged, they'll take down the sick, naturally, just naturally. And the herd, in order to stay strong, needs that cleaning agent, if you will look at it that way, as it's vital to the health of the herd. So we're seeing the same thing with the virus, is it's actually vital to the health of the herd in general. And we're hearing that terminology creep in now, you know, in certain newscasts and different ways of talking about what's happening is, you know, strengthening the herd or strengthening the immunity of the herd.
The herd immunity, yeah. Yep, they're using that a lot. That's become the buzz phrase lately. Through that. So these perspectives, guys, again, I want to ask a question here. In thinking about these ideas and thinking about these possibilities, you know, we presented a couple alternatives to how this may be. And many of it, all of it feels really positive, but it also feels really kind of, for lack of a better word, feels right in that it speaks to what we really are about. You know, I know for me, and Jeff, you can speak to this of your own experience, but for me, the last 2 years has been a remarkable journey because I have been experiencing in my own process this unveiling of sort of the underpinnings of how we have created what we have created. Everything from, you know, government to laws to regulations to body to health to there's so many things that are structured within our culture. And I've struggled a lot, particularly the last year, because in my mind, I would observe different, like the amount of cars being produced, the amount of homes being built. You know, I was living in San Diego and they were building like crazy. And then I come to Denver and they're building like crazy. And I think to myself, this is not sustainable. How is this sustainable? It's so out of kilter. Our whole system is out of kilter from the obsessive, compulsive, need to take people's money and to manage people via their money and capitalism the way it is existing now, the be all end all of everything. We're willing to sacrifice people in order for a monetary system to function because that's more important than the people. So there's a little bit of a balance issue that I see going on in the experience of just universally. I can't speak to other countries. Other countries approach things differently. They have a different set and a different basis from which to operate their culture. But in our culture, it's not healthy. So we want to transition here into talking about now wellness is about this. I want to keep this body here. I want to be here and engaged on the planet. And I don't say that from a perspective of, oh my God, there's a disease, I'm going to die. I'm just saying that's my desire. I want to be here. I want to participate. I want to engage. So if I'm going to do that, then I guess I need to figure out how I'm going to be responsible for this thing. How am I going to be responsible for this body in this current environment and engage with my body instead of engaging with all the nonsense on the outside that isn't serving anything and isn't answering any questions? Any thoughts on that?
Absolutely. First and foremost, I won't speak for Jim, but I believe we're in alignment that would like to promote an accountability and a responsibility at a personal level for our health and wellness, and to not outsource that to other professions or even a government or even a community system that's saying, oh, this is what you should do right now to deal with this. Because quite honestly, who could be the subject matter expert when we haven't, nobody was alive the last time anything like this showed up on the planet. Nobody literally that's here today was alive then that has any personal experience of what to learn from it, how to interact with it. But most importantly, as we stated a little bit earlier, we've gotten to a place in human history where people are very, very sick, living very, very unhealthy, unsustainable lives. And if it weren't for what we would call the advances in modern medicine, most of the people that are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, they would be dead already if we didn't have certain vaccines and certain medications and certain life-sustaining ways of prolonging life. But it's like, are these people really happy? Are these old people that have oxygen bottles near them, or they're in wheelchairs, or they're using walkers because they've eaten so many foods polluted with all of the ingredients that weren't part of nature, that they're preservatives or additives or whatever. And we drink too much alcohol, smoke too much tobacco products, just in general. I'm not saying all of the people listening right now. There's probably, and the people listening to this show are probably per capita better at taking care of themselves than the, say, average Costco shopper. But for the most part, we have outsourced our health and wellness to the news media, to doctors, nutritionists, advertisers, you know, take this pill, go get this treatment. But people are not growing their own food. They're not responsible for knowing where their water comes from, or even, you know, I run into this all the time, Jim, that people that are using reverse osmosis systems, because like everybody has one, don't realize that that water is literally taking vitamins and minerals out of your body. If you, because water is a sponge, and it attracts minerals and vitamins, and RO water, reverse osmosis water, is deplete of all of those. It, when it goes through the filtration system, it removes everything. And so, you know, even the simple thing like us not drinking water that has vitamins and minerals in it, you do that for a decade or two, and you're going to create some significant health problems. And it's like, it just fascinates me that most people don't want to know that information. It's like, we want the simplicity. We still want to cook our food in a microwave. We want to wrap it in plastic, all these modern conveniences that we have, that little by little by little, none of them by themselves will probably kill you. But my goodness, if you add them all up, it's going to make your years toward the end of your life, there's going to be a cost to pay because of our unwillingness to put our hands in the dirt, to deal with worms and bugs and things like that on the produce that we grow, because people don't want to do it anymore. It's really, really fascinating, utterly fascinating. There was a gentleman I was talking to when we were considering being involved with an organization to deal with homelessness up in Los Angeles. And one of the primary problems that they have in that inner city area, they actually call it a food desert. And I'd never heard that before, food desert. And I'm thinking, okay, I know what a desert is. I know what food is. And they're saying there's actually no real food in the inner cities. It's all packaged and it's all trucked in. There's nothing grown there. And it creates at a really large level, just this mecca of preservatives and additives and things that are in the food that are not good for us. And that's primarily 90% of what the people that live there are eating. And so they have diarrhea, they have all kinds of messed up internal systems. And, you know, you stay there a couple of decades and it's gonna have an outcome that's not gonna be positive.
Yep. I think it's real important here. And I know, you know, we do this a lot, but it's important that everybody understand that there's not a judgment about this. This is a process of attempting to bring awareness. You don't have to change everything today. The idea is get conscious. Our whole message, our whole point in this whole thing is to say, guys, there's so many alternatives and we keep choosing bad ones. We keep choosing unhealthy ones. Let's choose different alternatives and see if they do differently. The system as it is now is broken. If you can't see that, then you're not looking. That's called head buried in the sand. The system is broken. The system is undermined by a lot of things that don't serve anything other than a specific few bunch of people or a particular way of being. We're encouraging you to just start to get engaged with your body. How many of you out there exercise? How many of you out there have a regimen? And in that regimen, how many of you spent the time to understand your own body in the context of the regimen you have adopted. What do I mean by that? Well, fitness is a big deal, but fitness in and of itself, in the way it's used in our country, is a way to keep you at odds with yourself, because it's used as a mechanism to promote health, so to speak, but in a way, but in a particular way. It's not about you understanding you, it's about homogenizing your experience, and that if everybody works out, then everybody will be more healthy, then you can still drink crappy water and eat crappy food, but you're working out. Or you can work out, but I'm going to do better because I'm going to go to the Jamba Juice and I'm going to have a juice every day, and I'm going to do the things that I'm supposed to do. Again, I'm changing that perspective here. Be responsible for and engaging with our body. You know, my process of how I attend to my body changes pretty regularly. And I don't mean every day regularly, but there is an ebb and a flow. This is an organic thing here. This is not a mechanical thing. And this is where I think we get into danger, is that there's so much misinformation, but also the way we look at the body. If you look at I'm thinking of terms of movies, in terms of TV shows, and like Westworld is just fascinating to me. Because we actually treat our bodies the way they're exemplified in the media. So we think of them as an object, and we treat them like an object. Like, this is a mechanical thing that's just going to be there, and we can shovel crap at it all day long, and it'll be fine eventually. Until we're at that, as Jeff was talking about, we get to that age where we can't anymore. The body doesn't have the ability to regain its own balance, because we've beat it down so completely by not attending to our process. So again, there's a ton of good information out there, but you got to start with your own body, how you're feeling, because everything you ingest, everything you put in your body has a chemical response that causes a chemical response. And those chemical responses cause mental and emotional responses, and it all evolves. So it's all part of the same organism. If you're having a hard time being able to sit and be quiet, chances are good there's foods that you're eating, probably sugar, possibly salt, that you're eating an excessive amount of, that doesn't allow your nervous system to settle because it's constantly stimulated. Again, not a judgment, just observe your own process. Turn the package over, look at what you're consuming, and decide if that serves you. Again, being responsible for our bodies. So that's called looking at what you consume, looking at how you use your body, looking at how you support your body. If your workout regimen is abusive, that's not supportive of the mechanism, people. It's not supportive of the mechanism. The body, there's nowhere that I've ever seen, no book I've ever read, that said the body desires to be abused in order to feel healthy. I don't know that one. Anyway, I've gone on quite a while.
What would you consider abusive, just as kind of a baseline, so people have an idea of what you're saying?
I'm saying abusive is any program that you have not worked through with your body to understand how your body responds. So there's nothing wrong with working out, and I apologize if that's how I'm presenting this. There's nothing wrong with it. It's a process of building strength in the tissues and the muscles, and particularly if you're doing it correctly, the breath, because really the breath should be the source of what your workout is, and everything else comes after that. Because the breath is what brings in the chi and the prana and the energy and the life force energy to help you convert all of that energy into muscle tissue and into sustainability. So to me, it's when you're taking on programs and you go spend 2 or 3 hours at the gym, literally beating yourself up because you want to have the poppy, bulgy, big, okay, good, have that. But if you're going to do that, then find balance in another direction. Again, it's all, you gotta have balance. You gotta find the balance. But more importantly, talking to your body, understanding the impact that these things have on your body, whether it's workout, whether it's food, whether it's anything, your body communicates, and it communicates very, very well. And all you have to do, like with all the things we talk about, is just be quiet and get in touch with what is your process. Personally, I don't have the ability, and I've tried it over the years. I've gone to the gym, I don't even know how many times I've started the gym, and I can get there and I can go there and I can talk myself and rah-rah myself into it. And then after I'm done, I go, wow, that really sucked, that hurt, that didn't feel good. And what I get is a lot of, no pain, no gain. You know, if you're not hurting yourself, then you're not doing it right. And I'm like, wait, but why is tearing muscle tissue good? Why is that healthy? And again, that's my perspective. You may have a different perspective because you take a lot of vitamins and minerals and supplements that support that process. That's a way of creating some balance. But also make sure the body is, that's what the body wants, your body. Because if your body is not there or isn't feeling it, you're creating resistance every time you do that exercise, every time you do that workout, every time you eat that food. And that resistance, to Jeff's point, do that every day for a month and see how miserable you feel. And we'll be right back right after this message.
Question: would you like more Adventures in Truth podcast? We've got you covered. In addition to all of the major platforms we're on, Spotify, Apple, Deezer, Stitcher, Podcast Addict, we are now going to be live streaming 2 times a week. Our live casts will take place Wednesday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time or Friday afternoons at 4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. These will be brand new shows, and we're looking forward to your interaction. And you can do that by joining us on our Facebook page at Adventures in Truth and type in your questions, and we will answer them right there on the air with you. So we're looking forward to seeing you there, and we appreciate you so much, and thank you for enjoying and engaging with Adventures in Truth podcast.
And we're back.
What I think would be helpful for our discussion right now, because it sounds like we're talking about interventions and strategies for being accountable for our health and wellness, and not selling or giving that to somebody else as their job to take care of us. So if we start with the most foundational, important thing to do, this hopefully just makes so much sense that if we start with breath, it would make most sense to me that the most important thing to start with is the thing that you do the most. So we breathe like 24 hours a day, all the time. There isn't any other one thing that we do more than breathing to start. Where to start? If you're looking for a place to start, because it's what we do the most, that would be the place to start. You'll get the highest gains, biggest return on investment in starting with breath. So people, well, what do you mean? I breathe. I mean, I wouldn't be alive if I wasn't breathing. Yes, we would agree with that. However, most people don't breathe correctly. What do you mean breathe correctly? Well, if you actually, they've got these little things you stick on your finger that show how much oxygen is in your system. And there are ideal amounts of oxygenation in the blood, as well as just moving the blood around through the body, even getting old blood out. It all really starts with breath. Most people do not breathe in through the nose. They just take chest breaths with through the mouth. If you're interested in learning any more about this at all, there's actually plumbing that you cannot take a full breath if you do not inhale through the nose. And if that just sounds so basic and you don't believe me, just look up some basic anatomy stuff and you'll realize there's actually plumbing that goes through the olfactory system, the nose plumbing down into the lungs, that if you really want to fill up the bottom quarter of your lung with enriched oxygen, it has to come through the nose. You can breathe through the nose and the mouth together, but mostly if you'll focus on taking a full breath, and when you get there, you can always breathe just a little bit more, just to baseline what a full breath is, because most people don't do that. We take half breaths. And there are times and places where you'll want to really play around with different breathing techniques. So what might you want to also offer regarding suggestions for starting somewhere with breath? How would you want to talk about that, Jim?
It's an excellent foundational point. If you want to focus on your body, breath is the best place to do it. Energetically, I do breathing exercises twice a day. I spend easily 20 minutes each time, and it's all in through the nose and out through the mouth, in through the nose and out through the mouth, creating that flow. But I'm also moving and directing the breath through my body, because understand, you're an energetic being. And while you think this is all real solid, When you get down to the micro level, you find out it's not as solid as we think it is. And that really has little bearing on anything, but it's more about understanding that that breath process is a way of shifting and moving energy in your body. So as you breathe, you allow the breath to cause your body to kind of open and to release. And then you begin to feel, this is that relationship we're talking about. Then as you breathe, you can begin to feel where tension lives in your body or where you're holding energy in your body. And you can direct that breath in as you're doing it and dispel that energy. And that's part of the process of cleansing your whole field. It doesn't require huge processing. It doesn't require a ton of anything other than focused attention. And it creates this amazing foundational place that you can do so many more things from. Whether it's your meditation, whether it's your yoga, whether it's your workout, whether it's your walk, whether it's whatever it is, it sets a powerful foundation because you're, as I said before, you're pulling in the energy that sustains life, and then you're focusing that energy that sustains life, and you're creating a foundation with it, and then you're allowing that to guide where you go from there. Does that answer your question?
Absolutely. And you had mentioned previously, I just want to double down on this awareness to share with our listeners is if you're not familiar with thinking of air, everything that makes up air, all the elements involved with air, if you've never heard of chi or prana or thought of ether, space, whatever you want to think of what's around us that we breathe inside of ourselves, it really is an energy form. Mm-hmm. And if you haven't ever thought of it that way, then do yourself a favor and do a little bit of research on what that is. Because if you're living your life and you're like most people, taking half breaths the majority of your day, you're going to have half the energy that you could have. And to just notice the difference between a half day's energy versus 2/3 versus 75% or 80%, you know, you start pushing it up a little bit higher. It's like, wow, all I did was change how I breathe and I feel 10% better, 15% better, 20% better. And you only have to do that for a couple of months consciously before you've now created new neural pathways to make conscious breathing subconscious, and you can then give it back to the mind and say, this is now how I'm going to breathe all the time. And I don't have to think of it consciously so much because I've now created a new habit of how to change my breath and my breath style. So are we done talking about breathing? Any more thoughts about breathing? Okay.
Good.
So if we're working from what we do the most to what we do the least, as far as where you can start being accountable and responsible for health and wellness, let's talk about sleep next, because it's the next thing we do every day that would be what we're doing the most. So we breathe the most, then we sleep next. And most of us do not have a sleep chamber, or you don't look at your sacred space that we call our bedroom or whatever, wherever you're sleeping, as a sleep chamber. But we need to have that be free from light as much as possible and free from distracting sounds and vibrations as much as possible. And we also need to keep it free from pets and other things that will wake you during the night, cause you to get up and go to the bathroom with minor disturbances or whatnot, because we really need to fall asleep and stay asleep throughout the night. That's the goal. And that's because of the way our dream system works, is that we need to have complete sleep cycles, and they operate in sequence from the first one to the sixth or seventh one, to where we're getting three or four more minutes of REM sleep in each sleep cycle throughout the night. And if we wake during the night, it resets that whole system back to step one, where you may end up only getting 15 to 20 minutes of REM a night rather than 45 to 50 minutes of REM each night if you stayed asleep all throughout the night. And you add that up night after night after night after night, and you create a sleep debt in terms of how the mind organizes itself and puts things from short-term memory into long-term memory or not, based on how much you're actually dreaming, which is based on how much you're actually sleeping in what we call quality sleep. So that's just a broad brush on, there's a lot of room for improvement with most people with regard to your sleeping. I'd like to make
I would like to throw one thing here. Breath has a profound effect on sleeping. So as you're building this pyramid, it's really important to recognize that what comes before is the foundational material for what comes next. So if you're not breathing, you're not going to be sleeping well. If you're not sleeping well, you're not going to be eating well, and you're not going to be breathing well. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And in particular, if you're carrying around even as much as an extra 5 to 10% body fat on top of what would be considered normal, the fatty deposits that build up in the throat actually create sleep apnea. And even though you are asleep during the night, if you snore at all, that's a primary alarm. That's a primary red flag that says you have a sleep disorder. And as a result of that, you are not going to feel rested and relaxed when you wake up in the morning because you did not get adequate quality sleep. Even if you stayed in bed for 13 hours, there's quantity and quality, and they both have to sync up with each other. And what we're talking about right now is getting the right amount of quantity and, equally as important, the right amount of quality sleep. And we call that sleep hygiene. Right. One of the things, last piece about the sleep, is preparing the body to go to sleep. And we do not do a good job of that. If we went back a couple hundred years ago, before electricity, there were candles and campfires is really all people had to take the day into the night to be able to be productive or get a little bit more work done. But for the most part, blue light leaves our atmosphere when the sun goes down. And in the absence of blue light, our bodies start to create melatonin about 2 hours in advance of us getting sleepy and wanting to actually go to sleep. When we're watching any kind of a screen, that screen still has lots of blue light in it. And as that comes through the eye and it hits the pineal gland, it's still stimulating the mind to want to stay awake, even though you are getting a little sleepy and it is 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night. If you're staying up that late each night and you're exposing yourself to blue light that entire time, that is not going to lead to a healthy quality and quantity night's sleep. So you can get screensavers that block the blue light. And if you don't want to do that, say for your TV or whatnot, you can even buy eyewear now that puts blue light blocker into the lens. So that gets activated in certain conditions of less light, as well as just glasses you can wear that block the blue light if you're watching TV late at night. But let's just keep in mind that we were really designed to get a certain amount of sleep, and the sun, midnight actually used to be the middle of the night for most people. But midnight now is only an hour or two before people go to bed now. So we've really thrown that whole system off.
Yeah. The interesting thing too with sleep, and I would suggest, and this has been, it's interesting how you adapt to things over time. For years, I never had a television in my room. When I was married originally, we never had a television in the bedroom. And I never missed it, never thought about it, and as Mike and I have been together, Mike likes a television in the bedroom. But we never watch it at night and never watch it in bed. It's just the funniest thing. He'll hang out there and play games and stuff sometimes, but I notice because every day my process is that about that time when things start to feel like, 8 o'clock, 8:30, 9 o'clock ish, things are winding is when I go into my night process, my night meditation. And I spend, I'm there for an hour. I'm there I'm there for an hour because I can and because that's what I like. Everybody's different. I start with breathing. I breathe, I stretch. And then I go into meditation and I stand and I do actually three different kinds of meditation because that's what feels good right now. That's what stimulates my, really gets me kind of in the zone. And it's interesting to note, to Jeff's point, if I come out of my meditation and Mike is still watching TV and I sit down for 5 or 10 minutes, I'll find myself re-stimulated and not in that wonderful, sleepy, quiet zone that I came out of my meditation in. But if I come out and the room's quiet and I can be with myself for a little while, I can stay up for another hour and just be with myself in contemplation or reading or, you know, listening to music or something, and then allowing that to just kind of take me off into the space and into going to bed. But I would encourage, you know, again, remember, guys, this is all about building a new model of wellness. What we're really supporting here is this is encouraging everyone to find a new model. Our model since the Industrial Revolution, if not before, has been an illness-based model. We focus on disease and we focus on what's wrong with us. And we don't focus on how to build wellness. And so what you have is a society that's in opposition to itself, because the large interests are funneling tons of money and advertising and things that they can throw in our faces, in our spaces, in our consciousness about how important their viewpoint of illness is. And so we continue to buy into that model, and we're not being given a lot of alternatives. We have to hunt for those. We have to seek those out. And there's not as much clear clarity or guidance, quite frankly. It's not as well-tuned a machine, because it's not a machine. it's what we've been talking about, this idea of wellness starts with self. Wellness has to start with understanding our own bodies. Wellness does not come from a position that someone outside of ourselves has more information or knows more about me than I do. Wellness says, I've taken the time to understand and to learn more about. I'm never going to completely get my whole body, but I can certainly dial in enough that I can feel the rhythms, and I can feel when something impacts me in a way that doesn't serve my energy or my field, and then I can make more choices, different choices.
Right.
So that wellness model is setting this foundation for taking choices and making choices that are about supporting your aliveness and wellness. And so many of our choices are not based there that it can feel overwhelming. You know, as Jeff was talking about the sleep process, oh my God, people, there are so many people who don't sleep and so many people who sleep poorly. I mean, you know, when I was doing my regular gig thing, going to work, and it was never ending, you know, nobody ever got sleep or nobody ever got good sleep. And if they did, it was like 1 in 100,000, you know. But it's all predicated on what I was saying before, building that foundation. You have the breath, you have sleep, you have food, you have things that have to be managed. And that management process has to be done by the person who inhabits this body. You're the only one who's in it. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yes. Yes. I've noticed a lot of aging people tend to have their primary companion as a pet, and they generally sleep with their pet. And pets and humans were not designed to sleep in a bed together. They're on completely different circadian rhythms. They have different abilities to hold, you know, liquids and go to the bathroom and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, as much as you may enjoy the cozy niceness of a vibrating cat, you know, purring in your bed, or a dog sleeping with you, you will not sleep well. Generally speaking, you will not sleep well if you have a pet or a child or somebody that's not at your about same age and doing what you're doing to sleep with. You really have to have a good bedfellow that sleeps well with you for you to sleep also.
We have that's an agreement we have, actually, Michael and I. We have a crate for the dog for sleeping, and he's been there since day one. And I've said all along, no, I can't, no. Dog does not belong in my bed. No. If you want to, and so the balance of that is, when he goes and takes naps, he takes the dog and takes the dog when he takes a nap. So we can have doggy time, and they can have, because for him, that's a connection point. So that's okay. And to me, that's perfectly fine. It's a nap. It's a time of a different type of rest, and it's a connecting point. So you want to do that, you know, when you're having a nap, great, go for it. But at that time of reset, that time of going into the deep sleep and going into that restful sleep.
The answer is no.
in the
next couple minutes, if we could, we won't have time to talk about all the pieces in the pyramid, but if you, in your mind, continue to look at what might come next after we've talked about sleep, would be your workspace. If you do work, you're there for 8 to however many hours a day, and that space needs to be a space that you resonate in and it feels good to you. To whatever degree that you can, have plants there and have water there or bring the four elements into that workspace, you will find that your energy will be more vibrant and you'll feel more alive. Having a little music in the background, if you can do that, all these little nuances help, you know, small percentages add up to the whole over time, but create a healthy workspace to the best that you can. Again, because that's where you're spending mass quantities of time. That would also include the type of people that you're working with and choosing who you're going to be exposing yourself to with regard to their energy systems. And because we do feel each other's emotions, it's very important that you are around people that are resonating at a similar frequency that you are, and that that frequency would be more positive than negative throughout the day, because it will impact you significantly.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And it stimulated in me an awareness of the idea of overwhelm in this process. Guys, it's so important for everyone to really grasp the concept that much of what we have created in society, while it's not bad, isn't necessarily directed toward our wellness, and it's not directed toward our health. So as you embark on this process, as you take steps toward your wellness, you're going to feel frustrated at times. You're going to feel overwhelmed at times, because as you peel back the layers of understanding your own wellness, you start to see how unwell the world is around you. You start to see how unwell the system is around us. And that can feel very overwhelming. It can feel very kind of defeating. And I would encourage you to not go there. That's part of the mass conscious story. That feeling is just you meeting the resistance to this mass consciousness that has built so much momentum and so much energy that when someone pulls back from it, there is an active energy that sort of wants to pull you in and wants to grab you and make you continue to feel less than yourself, to feel less than worthy, to feel less than good. And so I encourage you, really focus on self, focus on the on your body and your experience, and begin to build your habits. Step into it one step at a time. Recognize that it's not always going to be easy, but it will flow, because you're processing out old energy. You're processing out all of your attachment to all of that mass conscious stuff. And sometimes those attachments are pretty intense. And it doesn't mean you have to suffer. It just means the more conscious you can be, the easier that transition can be.
Right. I find it interesting that our time is almost up today and we haven't even talked about diet or exercise or any kind of a spiritual practice, because we were building the pyramid. And again, if people can see that, you know, you can spend a lot, you can get professionals to help you with your diet and your exercise plan, and you can have a guru. But if you actually think about the amount of time that you're eating, the amount of time that you're in the gym or doing some kind of exercise, or the amount of time that you are doing some kind of a spiritual practice, which are very, very, very important elements to wellness, but they're such a small overall, they're such a small percentage of the overall pyramid. And that's what we were talking about today, is breath, number one, and then sleep, number two, and then your work environment, your home environment, actually making sure that those are conducive to your particular tastes and desires of what you want to expose yourself to.
Yeah.
And most people never start there. They have no awareness that that's really step number one, step number two, step number three. Most people go straight into, oh, I have diet and exercise and I have a spiritual practice. I do yoga, but I'm still unhealthy.
Yeah. That's a really, really good point. And I would love to extend an invitation to our viewers to join us on our Friday show. We'll continue to build this pyramid for you. This shift in our show today was sort of a last minute preparation. So it's exciting, I know, for me, and I'm sure for Jeff, because this is the thing we do that we love, is when we tap into something that we previously hadn't tapped into before. And now have this, you know, building this pyramid, what a powerful, powerful perspective to be able to lift this whole concept into a whole other area. So We will continue this conversation on Friday on our afternoon show. So look for that. Either if you see us live and can join us, great. If not, you can catch the episode as we push it out as a podcast the following week. But powerful stuff here. And we're going to continue to evolve this. There's lots more to talk about, but to Jeff's point, it would be foolish and not healthy at this point to take more steps up the ladder when we can't give you enough information about that. So let's stay with the idea of breathing and sleeping. Let's lay that foundation. Let's support that foundation in whatever way we can. So creating that wellness environment I was talking about just for a second, what I do personally as a part of my daily practice every day. The thing that's important about creating that wellness environment is that while you may encounter a little bit of resistance here and there, when you take charge of your body, when you take charge of your, when I say take charge, I mean being responsible for the relationship you have with your body, a whole lot of things change. Part of that change is initially you may feel some resistance, but the resistance just becomes an object in the field of your awareness because you're now dialed in. You're not going through a relay, meaning you're not feeling something and looking outside of yourself to find an answer to that question so you can bring it back inside to see if that's the right answer, or not even bring it back inside, just say that's the right answer because that's what the doctor said, and then pursue that as an effort to feel better, and then you don't feel better and you don't understand why you don't feel better. I hope that made total sense to everybody because it wasn't supposed to. It was supposed to be confusing because it is. Creating that wellness environment, getting in touch with your body. I have a relationship with my doctor that I ask the questions. I go to my doctor and I say, here's what's going on for me. Can you help me with this? Do you have any thoughts about this? Let's talk about this. When I went to my doctor back in February, I had gone through a process of having a kidney stone, which is a ramification of choices that I made that didn't serve my body. And I'm very well aware of that. But what happened in that is that there was a discovery that I had a stone in my gallbladder. And at the time, it was a 9-millimeter stone. It wasn't doing anything. It was sitting there and being all fine and good. They say it wasn't doing anything. I was having all kinds of problems that you wouldn't necessarily nail down to one specific thing. So I observed my own process. And then I went to my doctor and I said, dude, here's the deal. I got a 9-millimeter stone sitting in an organ that it doesn't belong in. That's going to hurt me at some point. I don't want to wait to be hurt. I want it now. I want to deal with it now. What are my options? I want to figure out if it means taking the organ, then that's the option I have because the other option isn't an option for me. I don't want to go through that suffering and pain unnecessarily. But that comes from being dialed into my experience. I was noticing the changes in my digestion. I was noticing that I was walking around feeling like I was a 400-pound human being. And I'm not even close to 400 pounds. But all of those things led me to a point of saying, this is my body and I don't like how I feel in it. I got to figure out how to shift this. And having that conversation with my doctor changed my world. I mean, literally 6 days later, I was on a table getting my gallbladder removed. Now that may not be everybody's experience, but that's the power of intention and clarity because I knew my health was at risk and I needed to do something. And so I stepped in and said, let's figure out how to do that. And so I encourage you, again, you may not get to that point tomorrow, but get to the point of starting with the breath and the sleeping. Are you sleeping? Did you sleep last night? If you didn't sleep last night, what are you doing today to make that better? Are you breathing more? Are you seeing how that's going to help you breathe, how that's going to change your sleep process? And I apologize because we could talk on this for all day long and we are running to the end of our time today. But Jeff, is there anything you'd like to bring to the summary or closing with our experience today?
Nope. We'll jump in again on Friday.
Guys, thank you so much for joining us. This has been an amazing conversation. We're looking forward to building this pyramid with you on Friday. We'll do a little review and then we'll add some more pieces to this pyramid and really flesh this out in a way that you can begin to take steps in your own experience to create your own wellness world so that as we each create it, we begin to expand that energy and wellness becomes our focus instead of illness. So on that note, thank you for joining us. Please check out our website, www.adventuresintruth.com to check out our latest podcast episodes and to see what's happening in the world of the Science of Transformation and Adventures in Truth podcast. thank you all for being here and have an amazing day.
All right. So long, everyone.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Adventures in Truth podcast. If you would like to listen to more or to explore all our offerings, visit us on the web at www.adventuresintruthpodcast.com.